Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm your host, Eric Christensen, and you can track me down on LinkedIn as well as reallifepharmacology.com. You can hit the contact button there, shoot us a message. Be sure you go to reallifepharmacology.com, snag your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. I provide a lot of clinical pearls within that document, so definitely go check that out. Take advantage of that absolutely for free and for following the podcast here. So today, I'm going to cover cilostazol. The brand name of this medication is Pletol. And from a mechanism of action standpoint, this drug inhibits the action of phosphodiesterase 3. Okay, so you're probably wondering, why is phosphodiesterase 3 important? Phosphodiesterase 3 breaks down cyclic AMP. And when we use cilostazol, which inhibits or blocks the action of that enzyme, we end up with preserving cyclic AMP. Cyclic AMP works to prevent platelet aggregation as well as promoting vasodilation. So those two effects can be beneficial in the setting of intermittent claudication, typically associated with peripheral vascular disease. That is the primary use that I see this medication used in clinical practice. There's a few clinical quirks and pearls you definitely need to know, and I would say those clinical quirks and pearls lead to a lower desire to use this medication because we've got some potential issues with drug interactions and contraindications. So the main beneficial effects, like I mentioned, antiplatelet and vasodilation type effects. So what is intermittent claudication? That's kind of a term that you may or may not know well, but intermittent claudication basically refers to this inadequate ability to get typical blood flow down through the arteries and veins, and particularly that blood flow or that lack of blood flow impacts the lower limbs, the legs and the feet. And patients can have really painful, burning, stinging symptoms. I had one patient I recall working with that mentioned it was almost similar to your leg being very, very asleep. And in a way, that is kind of similar if you've ever had that situation where you've kept your legs crossed for a long time or something. And but you can imagine that pain not going away on its own with intermittent claudication. As we exercise more, that pain can actually get worse, and patients basically just have to stop what they're doing and, you know, can't walk any further is basically what happens to a lot of these patients. They're really limited in their mobility and the amount of, you know, distance they can travel. So with cilostazol, covering some of the adverse effects, kind of generalized headache, GI upset, those are probably going to be the most common adverse effects. A couple others to remember, edema or swelling, and I'll talk a little bit about that in the drug interaction section too. But this drug, cilostazol, actually has a contraindication in patients with severe heart failure. So that can certainly be a problem or an issue there. And then if we go back to the mechanism of action, if we remember we have antiplatelet activity, we've got to think about the potential for bleed risk and vasodilation. You know, we're probably going to be monitoring blood pressure in this type of patient, make sure they aren't getting dizzy or things along those lines. One little pearl on administration I wanted to mention. So cilostazol is recommended by the manufacturer to give on an empty stomach. And with various drugs, we do this for various purposes. And a lot of the times, it's actually to prevent the blocking or blunting of food with absorption. But in this case, giving cyclosporine with food can actually significantly raise concentrations. So the important thing of why the manufacturer recommends on an empty stomach is, well, first off, this is probably the way it was studied. And secondly, we really want a consistent way to administer that medication so we don't get bigger fluctuations in serum concentration. So again, manufacturer does recommend giving this medication on an empty stomach for consistency purposes. So let's take a quick break from our sponsor, MedEd101.com. If you're looking for pharmacist board certification study material, Naplex, geriatrics, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, or pharmacotherapy, definitely go check out our resources at MedEd101.com/store, STORE. We've also got access to clinical books with case studies, drug interactions, really a great clinical resource to really help you get some more real-world hands-on experience. So definitely go check out those resources. Support our sponsor, MedEd101.com/store. So with that, let's finish up on drug interactions. The primary thing I remember with cyclosporine with regards to drug interactions is it can have CYP3A4 interactions. Okay, so the drug itself is actually broken down, at least in part, by CYP3A4. So when we inhibit CYP3A4, this can lead to increased concentrations of cyclosporine. So we're going to look out for some of those signs and symptoms of adverse effects and toxicity that I mentioned before the break there. Some drugs that I commonly come across, I guess, diltiazem, some of the macrolides, more specifically erythromycin, clarithromycin, fluconazole is another drug that can have CYP3A4 inhibitory effects. And then we've also got grapefruit juice, which is actually, considered a food slash supplement as well. So all these drugs can inhibit CYP3A4 and increase the potential risk for elevations in concentrations of cyclosporine. Other drug interactions I think about the cumulative effects. So patients who are at high risk of bleed, if they are on an anticoagulant, if they are on dual antiplatelet therapy, aspirin and Plavix, for example, those patients are at higher bleed risk. And if we add on cyclosporine, that's going to add on to that potential adverse effect. We're going to usually check out a CBC, monitor hemoglobin, potentially platelets as well, just to kind of monitor for this risk. If it's deemed that the risk is too great, we're likely going to go without the cyclosporine rather than, an anticoagulant or potential dual antiplatelet therapy. So, because a lot of these patients with peripheral vascular disease and potentially intermittent claudication, they're probably going to be at very high risk for cardiac complications as well, and maybe on some of those anticoagulant type medications. One other additive effect I kind of mentioned in the adverse effects, so vasodilations, the risk for dropping blood pressure a little bit. While I wouldn't say it's a substantial risk, I would say it's there, particularly maybe in a patient that's at risk for falls. Maybe they're borderline low blood pressure already. Maybe they're being treated with a ton of different antihypertensives, or they're on other meds that can cause dizziness and orthostasis. It's definitely something to look out for, and we can pretty easily monitor that with patient reporting of symptoms as well as checking those blood pressures. And then one last one, a very important one in my mind, patients with heart failure, this drug, there is a boxed warning that we shouldn't use this medication for those purposes. So I think about this medication, we should generally avoid it anyway. But if you don't have a patient with heart failure, this drug can cause edema and contribute to those type of symptoms as well. So think about meds that can add on to that potential effect. Calcium channel blockers, I think about pregabalin, gabapentin, pioglitazone, and of course the commonly used over-the-counter available medications like NSAIDs as well. So a few drug interactions to keep in mind there with cilostazol. Again, it's not a 100% extensive list. There are multiple others, but just wanted to throw out some of the ones that I've seen and I've come across in clinical practice there. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. If you enjoyed this episode, enjoy the podcast in general, do us a huge favor, leave us a kind rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Also, go snag your free PDF. Follow our podcast. When we've got a new episode, we'll shoot you an email. And that's at reallifepharmacology.com. And then, of course, if you're in the mood for an Audible book or any other resources pertaining to clinical pharmacy, clinical medication management, definitely go check out our resources at meded101.com/store. Thanks so much for listening. Take care and have a great rest of your day.